When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm actor David Arquette, and if you like the Watch Less podcast and you love movies and films, please subscribe and check out Cal and Fraser. They know the business.
Welcome back to Watch Less, Complex's podcast about movie and TV culture. My name is Cal, deputy editor of Complex's Pop Culture Channel. As always, the homie Fraser Tharp, Summerman, is in the building.
Yes, sir.
We're here for an episode that surprisingly was more up my alley, up my personal interests.
Heavy.
I mean, well, it's I don't really talk about it because I don't really have people who like will understand how long I've been watching pro wrestling. But you know, I still follow professional wrestling. It's something that I'm starting to realize that I've just been like a fan of watching TV. And I got hooked on pro wrestling when I was a kid, and I was always trying to find out, you know, when this zany form of entertainment was on. So as I've gotten older, I've gotten to understand a lot of the weirder stories in the world of pro wrestling. I mean, 'cause there was a time where there was nothing bigger than what they called the Monday Night Wars in terms of ratings. Like anybody talking about, you know, pulling a strong rating for a show in 2020, the 6.4 ratings that they were doing on like these crazy nights against football, like this was the stuff that people were nerd out on for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, that was always like a fandom that I was respected, but I never got pulled into it the same way like a lot of my friends and stuff did. I don't know why. Well,
and I will say it's not like it's far fetched because some of the biggest stars in pop culture come from that world, you know.
Right.
Hulk Hogan was the biggest star of the world. He's a racist now, but he was the biggest star of the world, and he was making, you know, he was trying to make his forays in the film.
Probably a racist then.
I'm big fan. I mean, that's big facts. We didn't know. Everybody was, you know, they wanted to flex like this man, not realizing what he was saying about who and, you know, where his daughter's boyfriends can go. But anyway,
that's a great segue though, because of the way that they're, you know, the wrestling and the pop culture world are like kind of forever intertwined is kind of the reason why we're here today.
Why this even happened. I mean, I don't want to go too long, but I feel like I have to, like, you have to set the scene. Like in April of 2000, this movie came out. It was called Ready to Rumble. David Arquette starred in it, you know. Past Watch Less guest Joe Pantoliano was a character in the film as well. It was a decent sized pro wrestling film, and because of the way corporate structure was built back then, the one entity fighting the WWE, WCW, was under the Warner, you know, umbrella at this point. So they were, you know, it made sense. Oh, we have this wrestling movie. Let's promote it on our wrestling show. David Arquette, a lifelong pro wrestling fan, was, you know, then, you know, thrust onto regular weekly pro wrestling TV and ended up becoming he was never a wrestler. He never wrestled. And on some fluke win, he ended up becoming the world champion of that federation. People hated it. It was definite, because a lot of it is just like, of course, this guy, he looks frail compared to a lot of these yoked up dudes. How could he even compete? That was the story they were going with, but it felt so ham-fisted for a lot of people that it turned them off to not just, you know, possibly, you know, a film they would have enjoyed because they're wrestling fans, but, you know, David Arquette and WCW and the whole thing. So he's worn this, you know, again, this movie came out 20 years ago. So he's worn this for years, and he's done a documentary. It's called You Cannot Kill David Arquette. And it's an amazing name. It's an amazing style of, you know, bringing the documentary. And it really, you know, takes you into his journey going from this detested guy over a couple of year span to, you know, trying to reclaim his narrative and storyline in the world of pro wrestling. It's very fascinating because it gets very personal in his life and his struggles with addiction and, you know, his career and everything. It's a very like intimate portrait of David Arquette, the man, you know, even if you're not a fan of pro wrestling, that's kind of like the guise that it's provided to people. But I don't want to go on too much longer because we have a great conversation with David Arquette about that. Some of his future projects, which you horror fans, I know you should be ready for, you know, what he's got in the pipeline. I know Frazier was. He was.
Yeah, that's when I tagged in.
that's what Frazier
picked up. Well, we're ready to talk Scream.
But we'll get into all of that after this quick break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally I go into like this big spiel about, you know, the person that's on the podcast, you know, why we love them, why we wanted them to be on and talk to them about all that jazz. But this week I have to issue a warning.
Uh-oh.
It's not normal that my love of TV and film and my love of pro wrestling get to kind of intersect in a way like this. Especially in a situation where we have like in the books, legitimate former WCW heavyweight champ, like that's it, what it became in the story of David Arquette is one thing, but you know, it's no bullshit. It is a thing that happened. It was, I think it was just, we're a couple months shy of 20 years ago. Yeah. It was a long, it was a thing that happened, and it kind of, you know, bleeds into you know, why we have David on today. I think a lot of our listeners might know him best as Dewey from Scream. I think my fondest memory, I think, in watching the doc was seeing him in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer film, which I hold near and dear. My esteemed co-host Frazier is more of a fan of the show. I don't know if we'll get into that at some point here.
Oh, but no.
All of this ties, the story of David Arquette kind of ties into this new documentary that he has on the way, You Cannot Kill David Arquette, which is kind of the journey of him reclaiming his legacy within the world of pro wrestling. It's a very eye-opening, very emotional trek. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, highs and lows in there. I'm glad to see you on the other side of it, so we could have you here. David Arquette, welcome to the Watch Less Podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you both for having me. That's such a nice intro.
I mean, you know what, it's one of those things where, again, seeing the doc and seeing you in a real space, want to try and rewrite history, I guess, for a time in your life that I think has really affected you in regards to, you know, again, like I mentioned earlier, you becoming, you know, an actual being an actor, promoting a film and becoming, you know, a world heavyweight champion in pro wrestling at a time when world wrestling was at its peak. I mean, ratings wise, this was, it wasn't, you know, small potatoes. It, compared to now, it might be a different situation, but this was peak wrestling in America. It was a huge deal. It seems like it's been beating you up for a while, but I guess I wanted to start by just asking you, David, what was the catalyst for you to say, hey, you know, I've been feeling this way for years. How do I rewrite the shit? How do I, you know, change history and, you know, try and make this thing a different legacy for me?
Well, it had a lot of beginnings. I mean, I went through this thing. I had a negative reaction to a stress test I was taking. They gave me an injection instead of just like being on a treadmill or something. And the injection like just essentially made me feel like I was having a heart attack. And they went inside and they put two stents in my heart. And then, so after that, you know, I was going into surgery and I was like, well, you know, my kids love me. My wife loves me most of the time. Sometimes I'm not sure. The jury's still out. No, loves me too. And my family loves me. I've done things in my career I can be proud of. Mm-hmm. I guess that's it. That's a life. That's a successful life. You know, it comes and it goes. But, and then I, in the back of my head, I kept thinking about this wrestling. But, you know, I wish that that whole, because it's always been something that I loved. I loved wrestling as a kid. And when they first presented it to me, I said, I thought that's a terrible idea. I thought it would be interesting for a fan to become the champion. It's sort of like a fan's dream. You're always looking at them like, oh, that'd be so cool to be the champion.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I think the fact that I was an actor and, you know, I was just sort of like a comedic actor or something, that they just kind of just bullied me for 20 years. I got sick of it. And I was just like, you don't really know who I am. You're sort of, you know, saying these things. I'm the butt of all the jokes. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'm just going to come back and prove myself. And I always wanted to train. I always wanted to do stuff in the ring that they didn't let me before.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, if I really got in shape and I used DDPY, his yoga,
to
get me inspired to start losing the weight. And then I started doing weights and doing jiu-jitsu and boxing and, mm-hmm. and training and wrestling all the time. And then it just sort of took on a life of its own.
Yeah. Like, I guess, you know, you talk about, you know, being a fan, I guess, take it back. In seeing how the doc was, especially the moments, you know, towards, and I don't want to spoil him or anything, but, you know, it feels like you have an affinity toward the Macho Man, Randy Savage, yeah, but like, yeah. You know, can you talk about who some of your favorite wrestlers were growing up, or maybe like some of your favorite matches or any, like your fondest memories from back when you were, you know, when you were growing up?
Yeah. I loved Macho Man growing up. I loved, Jimmy Superfly Snuka. That's why I jump off the top rope and I jump to the outside of the ring. But I loved Hulk Hogan. I was always a Hulkamaniac. Mm-hmm. But Andre the Giant, I saw Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan at the Los Angeles Sports Arena when I was really young. It was during that whole period when he was trying to pick him up.
Yeah.
And he finally did at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I got to touch Andre on the back and I was just like, it was really a moment of like, I don't know. It just blew my mind. Like, this guy's just a real giant and this world is so crazy. And what they do is so intense, but I never knew how intense it actually is till you get in the ring. People, I'll never like let people say it's fake or anything like that. You know,
it's
sports entertainment, but it's so painful on the body. I still ache and, you know, it's just a crazy, crazy sport. You really have to be crazy to do it. And you have to be fearless. You have to really commit to everything. And all aspects of it are a lot more difficult than people would think, cutting promos or just doing any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting to see you. I mean, I know eventually you ended up, you know, having a death match, and we'll talk about, you know, the situation with Nick Gage in a bit. But it was interesting to see you started this journey was you going to literally to someone's backyard to have a, you know, it was funny to see, like, because you had this height, then you've like been kind of the sharp decline for this while of people, you know, not disrespecting you because of, you know, how they perceived, you know, what you did to the sport of pro wrestling, you know, however they word it. But it's almost like you had to get like dragged through the mud and the fire to kind of like understand, you know, what it was like, you know, was that on purpose to kind of go kind of to, for lack of a better word, like the bottom of, you know, where pro wrestling is and kind of work your way up to the Nick Gage match?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the director's ideas to sort of take me from, backyard wrestling, the Tijuana, streets of Tijuana, train with luchadors, and then at Championship Wrestling for Hollywood, my first match with RJ City. Mm-hmm. And then we went on the independent circuit, just went all around. And then I had this wild death match with Nick Gage at a GCW's event, Joey Janela's Spring Break. It was intense, man. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I wasn't really like I wasn't prepared. I thought it was more like, I didn't know the difference between a hardcore match and a death match. I mean, I'd been watching, I watched Nick Mondo's documentary and I watched a bunch of death matches stuff and I got it. I saw what it was, but I didn't know that it was sort of frowned upon by the wrestling community as sort of garbage wrestling. Although that's also like, you know, apples and oranges. You're just sort of
like, yeah,
okay, you can use a chair and a table, but you know, don't use tacks.
That's fair. No, that's fair. Yeah,
I know,
that's
it's fair. Really like strange. I didn't know where the line was, so
yeah, yeah.
But I knew what I was getting into. It was mm-hmm. definitely my fault that I got injured the way I did. I learned a really great lesson there. Like, no matter what happens in the ring, always stick to the plan. Always go back to the plan, even if stuff starts going wrong. Mm-hmm. Just so something like that doesn't happen. I nearly killed myself. So
I want to cut in because I was going to ask this later, but I want to ask that. I remember when the video came out. It was a Sunday morning, I think. I was sitting in bed, like, what the fuck just happened with David Arquette? And I remember watching it and getting to that moment where it's like, okay, that didn't look like it was supposed to happen, and he looks like he's in, you know, serious danger. And rewatching it on the dock, it felt like there were two things going on in your mind. One was like, okay, am I going to bleed out? Like, you know, is this it? And two, I could tell that you were like, all right, well, how the hell do I finish the match? Because in following pro wrestling, that's the, you know, sick and twisted thing. It's like, what was it? There's the one infamous moment where Owen Hart, you know, RIP, he has a match with Stone Cold, and literally Stone Cold's neck is broken in the match. And they have to have a moment where it's like, okay, how hurt are you? We someone's got to pin somebody because we got to get on to the next thing so we can then get you out of here. And was that part, like, what, can you take us back to where your mind was when you walked out of that ring and you're like walking through the crowd realizing, you know, what the hell's going on with my neck?
Yeah, I thought I was dying for sure. I tried to pin him even though I wasn't supposed to win. I was like, if I'm going, I'm gonna go out a winner. And he kicked out twice. And then I got up and left. And then I got outside of the ring. And then I went. Luke Perry was there. It's not in the movie, but he said, "Davey, it's Luke." And I've known Luke since I was 17, 18 years old.
Okay.
He lived with us when he got 90210. It's like a crazy time. Yeah, so our families were really close, and we've stayed family forever. But he said, "Davey, it's Luke. The place is crowded." And I said, "Luke, is it pumping?" And he said, "No, it's not pumping." So I knew I wasn't gonna bleed out at that point, but yeah. I knew I wanted to go. It was weird. It's all sort of a blur too. Way over my head, and you know, there's things in wrestling that happen in the ring that, you know, sometimes aren't planned, sometimes are planned, but also people sometimes have different motives for being there. You know, sometimes you'll be in the ring with someone who just got in a fight with their girlfriend, and that's going to be a tough match. You know what I mean? Like, there's just things that happen. You know, the pros and the real legends of the game, they know how to navigate that stuff. They know how to hit you like and not, you know, knock you out. But it's a lot more real than people would think. It's, I always say, it's like choreographed MMA most of the time.
Well, you mentioned you know, getting in the ring with someone who might have just gotten into a fight with their girlfriend. How has going through this experience been for you in terms of using it as an outlet for your own emotional situations, be it frustration or anything else?
Or like the situation with you, because I know you also struggle with addiction and things like that as well.
Yeah, totally. It was weird because the whole film kind of captured a period in my life that had been years of battling different addictions and mainly alcoholism. But one of the biggest addictions I had was just being super self-critical, just beating myself up all the time. I've talked to a lot of people, and it seems like a real common thing, but it really was something that was holding me down. It was holding me down in my career. It was holding me down in my relationships. It was holding me down in sort of making decisions throughout my day that would, you know, lead to the best outcome, to be the most successful you can, to feel the best, to achieve what you wanna. Like, since then, throughout the whole experience, I'd been doing a lot of therapy, but it had all been kind of coming to a head, and I really learned a lot of stuff about my family, a lot of stuff about my childhood, about, you know, trauma and surviving that and sort of how to deal with that and the effects of it. And then really sort of, you know, not wanting to do that with my life anymore, not wanting to make these decisions that I'll regret later, decisions that I'll, you know, that, you know, make you, I don't know, some of the worst decisions I've made in my life were alcohol related, you know, you can't blame it, but you just get to a point where you don't want to do that kind of stuff anymore. So that's sort of where I got. And I don't know, I came out the other end a lot better, to be honest with you. You know, my wife had to deal with a maniac through the whole filming of this. You know, that's no fun for her. But she produced this whole documentary. She really was incredible with XTR and Bryn Mooser and David Darg and James Price did an incredible job directing it. So I felt like it was in good hands and I had great doctors and stuff. But my thing's like, how many people like are lucky enough in my position to be able to go to rehab, to be able to go to, you know, all these years of therapy and, you know, try all the different sort of medications till you find the right sort of things that work for you. You know, right now I'm not on any of those things, but I had to go through the different things to see like, oh, this is, does that, that. But not a lot of people can like do all that. So there's a really great book called Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It that helped me a lot. And The Untethered Soul. Both of those I got on audio tape, which helps a lot, and would work out with them and listen to them and just try to do some practices that are, you know, meditation is just kind of a life-changing thing. When you start really using it, you can kind of get to the place where, oh, well, this is just like a sort of temporary situation, the way the body we're in right now. And this is a whole bigger picture that we're all part of. It puts it into perspective. And then you can, you know, understand your greatness. And you can also understand why not to beat yourself up anymore.
Yeah.
And, then you can respect other people of their greatness. Like my thing is like, yeah, I'm a champion, but you're a champion in your world. You're a champion in your world. We're all the champions of our world. I think that's what Muhammad Ali's thing was. Yeah, right here. Float like a butterfly, sting like a
bee. There you go.
But
there you go.
His thing was, I'm the greatest. Mm-hmm. I'm the greatest. And I think that was more of a message to everybody. Like, you're the greatest. Don't let anyone tell you different. And 100%. Then you have to behave that way. So you're not, you know, demeaning your greatness.
Yeah.
Would you say that, you know, even though it's been physically demanding, that in a mentally speaking, you feel healthier going through this experience than you did during your tenure in Hollywood?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Hollywood's a rough sport because, you know.
The roughest out there.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's constant rejection. I mean, nobody really lets you know how much that happens. You know, you think dating's hard. Like, try to get a job in Hollywood. It's tough. You know, you go into these rooms, everyone's sitting back. Like, when I directed my first movie, none of the main characters, none of them auditioned. You know, some of those smaller roles because I didn't have time to meet them or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people don't sort of, you know, there's just all these games that are played. So it's even more than ever, it's important to have that self-confidence so that when you leave the room, if you get it or not, you don't really care. I used to leave an audition and be like, ugh. You know, one thing happened recently where something happened and I got really mad and I was like, oh, it was because when I was a kid, I had dyslexia and I couldn't read very well. I had one teacher who made me stand up in front of class and read, and I'd like feel humiliated and, you know, just like get through it and just be sweating and feel like the dumbest person in the world. And then I went on like for the rest of my life telling myself that I'm dumb and I'm stupid. And you know, you have to retrain your brain. You know, the one thing they talk about in that book, Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It, is your neural pathways. We all have these neural pathways. So somebody could say like the I'm stupid thing. So that's that's been there for so long. It's just a neural pathway that my thought process gets trapped into a lot. So if something comes up, I'm just, oh, and it feeds that. And when you're a kid, you don't have any power. So when you grow up, you're like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, somebody makes you feel stupid, you want to stand up to it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, call me stupid now, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then if you train your neural pathway that you know, I love myself, or, you know, I'm not stupid, or whatever it is, that all might sound silly. Mm-hmm. But you're literally retraining your brain. So when you start going down those rabbit holes, you can recognize it and then you just redirect it, and then you make that neural pathway more powerful.
Yeah, I think hearing you say that is why I was glad that I saw you made sure to visit DDP and go to Diamond Dallas Page's box. Like DDP, because when you were talking about, you know, your addiction and things like that, I'm thinking about how there's a lot of pro wrestlers who they weren't able to, you know, combat that and, you know, come out on the other side of that. And you know, I'm kind of grateful for people like DDP who's been able to help, you know, a number of people with, you know, meditation and yoga and, you know, getting a better life that way. You mentioned being good friends with Luke Perry. I didn't realize, I didn't make that connection initially, but I think it's interesting because I wanted to ask you if you followed current pro wrestling, and no, because his son is on his son is on AEW every week, and he's a beast. He literally, his name is Jungle Boy, and he's literally flying all over. Do you have conversations with Jack Perry about pro wrestling?
I do. I mean, you know, I had that ring in my backyard, and they'd come over all the time and wrestle, and it's just amazing for me to watch because the whole process was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So wrestlers talking like these different like codes, like somebody says, "Oh, how's it taking that pile driver from here?" They'll say, "That sucks. You know, it sucks." You know, what they're trying to tell you is it's, you know, you could break your neck. It's incredibly painful. You probably will never feel the same again. Like, yeah, they don't say, they wrestlers will never say, "Oh, that hurts really bad." Like, they'll never say that. So they'll say it sucks. So you have to like cue in the little things they're saying. And if you don't know the language, you're like lost in the ring.
Yeah.
Like, pit-a-pat, or they have all these sayings, and it's like, "Oh, that means you're just going to get me in the corner and just unload on me?" like certain things. And also, you know, there is like an outsider thing. So when you're coming in, there is a level of, you need to get roughened up. Like your body start getting like prepared for it. So there's a lot of stuff like that. But DDP was just such a, he's been such an inspiration to me. And Jack Perry, I mean, I just think the kid's a movie star. I'm like, okay,
you know,
wrestling's all great. I mean, it's amazing. It's incredible, but you're a movie star.
If Disney did like a live action Tarzan or something, like that's perfect for him right now. He could do that tomorrow. Again, you mentioned pile driver. You had Jerry Lawler in the dock, but
he gave me a pile driver. It's never been the same.
I was wondering, because I mean, you know, when I saw that happen, I had the immediate thought of like, you know, Andy Kaufman. And I don't know, like, was Andy like an inspiration of yours, especially with the way he flirted with pro wrestling and things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, this is like the undertone of this is some Andy Kaufman, like,
Yeah. I will say, because I follow this stuff a lot, I was on the side, just kind of like, all right, is this real? Is this, you know, how much of this is a work, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, but it seemed like, to me, it seemed like everything was on the level. So
it is, I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, you know, there's one part where I say, I haven't gotten a job in 10 years, but what I'm trying to say is I haven't gotten a job from an audition in 10 years. I've worked throughout that period of time. And I say it right after that, but they didn't have time. They cut it. And I was like, you got to say that part, because I don't want to lie to the wrestling community. They can spot lies like nobody else.
Yeah,
like when it doesn't feel real, like it's in our guts. So, so it is a movie, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a documentary and it's real and everything, you know, happened, but you know, they're telling a story too. So they couldn't include that part.
Of course.
My wife actually kicked me out of the editing room. Like, you can't get in here anymore. But that's also a way of like checking yourself. It's like, okay, you give it out to something greater and a bigger sort of universe picture. And then you just kind of trust things. And sometimes they turn out and sometimes they don't. And then you don't, but I don't know, to micromanage is a whole other world.
Yeah.
I'm into the mood of like, I just want to do projects that are quality, do the best I can with them, get like really talented people all together doing their jobs. Like, you know, early on I used to think like, oh, you got to do kind of everything. Like when I directed my first film, but once you start adding these really talented people, that's where we're all gonna like, you know, make this world even better than it ever has been.
100%. It's amazing to hear you talking about how much you're into the project, and you know, especially because your wife was in it, and so it must have sucked to hear. Cause we had plans for South By as well. We might have seen you at South By, but I think the first time I really heard about, you know, in a possibility of the documentary coming out was word when the South By got canceled. I know you guys were looking, you know, try and show it to distributors, and I know you ended up having like a whole party at your house or things like that. But can you talk about? I feel like now, because we're like what, 6 months-ish into the quarantine and COVID-19 going on, a lot of these stories about how the pandemic has affected, especially Hollywood, are coming out. So can you talk about, you know, kind of just like that journey from, okay, we thought we might be able to get some investors at South By to now we have to figure it out. And you eventually did. And I mean, you know, Neon is nothing to sneeze at. They're strong. They've been doing a lot of good stuff, especially over the last couple of years. But can you just, you know, talk a little bit about what that process was?
Yeah. Well, my wife was amazing. She's really just been incredible throughout this whole experience. She was like, all right, let's do something at the house, friends and family, you know, and just kind of not lose a beat and just kind of get it out there. And then just continue. And she's just pretty relentless on just, you know, making sure the right people saw it and getting out there and getting a buzz going. So I owe so much to her in that regard. You know, as far as the South by Southwest, I've always wanted to go. That's like one of those festivals where it's like all my favorite filmmakers go there and musicians and all these different like levels of artists. So that was a bummer, but it was like a bummer for a guy named King Brian, who's King Brian Anthony, who's one of the guys in the movie, who's like, this is going to be awesome for him because he works at a supermarket. You know, he's the manager of a chain of supermarkets. He's really like great guy, just stand up, salt of the earth, but loves wrestling, spin wrestling for years, has wrestled all these incredible people, like everyone. And he was going to come out. So it's like, to see like him not be able to, and we have a match with Effie, and I wanted to meet Effie because I'm a huge fan. And so like things like that were a bummer. And obviously the momentum you get from a film festival is really important. Mm-hmm. But we were really lucky to be picked up by Super Limited Neon. And, you know, there's just so much going on right now that, you know, it's like the least of anybody, you know, you can't really worry about anything if you're in a place where you're not worrying about getting kicked out of your house or whatnot. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's so many people like going through so much. I'm just feeling for them all and trying to do whatever I can to help in a way.
Definitely. Now that it is, you know, this journey is coming to a close, how do you feel?
I feel good. I'm glad. I'm like excited for the world to see it. You know, one thing you're an entertainer for, or filmmaker, or artist, or whatever, is to entertain people, to really give them something that they enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, when something like Scream happens, and even like that's another example. Like they say, like wrestling, like you know, hurt my career and all, blah, blah, blah. Like that's more the part of the movie. You know, I don't really feel that way myself. I mean, it had effect more on my self-confidence than anything else. But like, you know, drinking and getting shot on TMZ coming out of Bootsy Bellows is probably worse than doing a string of AT&T commercials or something. You know what I mean? There's certain things that will hurt your career, and just making it's really when you're building a career, you have to be sort of specific about your choices. And if you stay with that forever, and especially when you get to the top, if you're very like specific about what you want to do, so you're always kind of producing quality stuff for people to see. But when you have something like this, that it's getting a good reaction, you can kind of tell that people are enjoying it. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing for. You know, we do it to entertain you guys, like to entertain you guys do it to entertain me. You know what I mean? So that's sort of the game. So when it sort of works out, it's exciting, and I want people to hopefully enjoy it. And then you just, then like I wanted that King Brian and my buddy Jerry, who's a cop in Connecticut, to come to, and my friend Malcolm Wildman, to all come to like a signing and like meet the fans. And they're like, they're fans, and now they're part of this whole game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's sort of like the future fun.
Yeah, you're also putting a different side of yourself out there to the masses that I think, you know, would change. You know, you most of your most commonly known roles are always like in a wackier comedic aspect. So this is definitely putting a different side of you out there to the majority for people who may not be up on this before. Thanks.
I will say, because I mean, even looking at a lot of seeing the deathmatch footage previously and seeing some of the beginning of the doc was cool. Seeing you in Mexico and it was like there was the one moment where I'll never forget, the one guy's like, look, if he doesn't nail this, you got to get his ass out of the gym. That part was dope. But then it was like, okay, I didn't realize they were going to go and like do lucha stuff when like it was a red light and they were just going to go out. Like
I didn't either. That was I was like, oh, this is cool to watch. And then they're like, you got to do something. I was like, what? I hadn't even had that much training yet. And it was crazy. It was, and those guys were just so incredible. And those are like top luchadors, and they just go and do that during the day. It's like their day job. And that's the biggest stadium in Mexico.
It's almost like that's how you got to do it. If you're going to be that good night in, night out, it has to be, you know, clockwork. I was wondering though, you know, now that you've come out on the other side of this, you know, what is your current relationship with pro wrestling like? Are you done? I know you have, you know, there are certain health issues that, you know, you might, and you have a family who loves you and wants to make sure that are you outside, are you out of that, you know, no part of your life, but you know, are you planning on wrestling ever again? Do you watch, you know, how active are you in, you know, today's wrestling scene?
Yeah, I definitely watch. I love it. I love what they're doing, but they don't seem like, I don't know, maybe after the movie comes out, they'll give me some respect, because I'm still not getting really respect from them.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, WWE or AEW, you know, they're just kind of like, they still sort of see me as that guy, but
yeah.
You know, one of the coolest things too was touring the indie scene with RJ City. And that was like, you know, when you get to meet the fans and you get from these different city to city, you're driving through the night, you get a little sleep, you wake up and you have another match. You really like, I don't know, there's something that happens where you get to meet these people. You fall in love with this sport in a much deeper personal way. And, you know, stuff like, you know, Brian Knobs from the Nasty Boys at the end, he was like, you're one of the boys. And I was like, you know, this is kind of like, it's just a little kid's dream come true. So it again goes to the wanting to entertain people. So I'll definitely want to be involved. It would probably be more in the independent scene, but I kind of prefer that, to be honest, because you get more of a personal.
I'm sorry, because I wanted to ask, because I know I saw current WWE superstar Liv Morgan, shouts out Jersey. You guys had a back and forth on Twitter because she's a big fan of Ready to Rumble, which was the pro wrestling film that started, you know, all of this. And I think at one point you said, which was true, I guess because the WWE bought WCW, they should have whatever rights that WCW had to the film. But do you know anything, like, you know, had there ever been whispers of a Ready to Rumble 2 or anything like that? Do you know anything about that?
I mean, you know, typically the movies that get sequels, like, were kind of like smash hits.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird, you know, the when a movie doesn't make money, they just don't want to do anything.
They're not going to do anything. Yeah.
So it did have a shelf life and became more of a sort of cult classic. So maybe in the future. I mean, I love Liv Morgan. I love what she does. And
it's
funny to, like, make it all new and bring back some of the old actors. But I couldn't even get Scott Connor be in my documentary.
Oh, really?
He was just like, he doesn't even like to do talk shows. So he's just like, I don't like to go out there at all. I just do my job. And it's funny, different people's approach to sort of fame, I guess.
What's your relationship with Hollywood going to be like after this? Like, I feel like it could also open you up for some more dramatic roles even, or even you to contribute something to the fictional wrestling sports movie genre.
I would love, you know, I love the business still. So it's a funky business though. It's kind of like, it's got its roots in like the carny world, and it's still kind of, there's still elements of it there.
Yeah.
There's some interesting stuff. But I have a movie coming out in just like 8 days or something.
Yeah, I saw the trailer.
Spree,
it looks really fun.
Really, yeah, that's a wild, wild film.
Yeah.
So I've been doing stuff. I have a bunch of stuff that's coming out that I shot, you know, in the past year. So The Miseducation of Bindu is a really fun movie. Dr. Bird's Advice to Sad Poets. So a few fun films. Oh, Homeland, another one.
At some point, there's going to be a Scream 5.
Yeah.
At some point.
We're going to go film it in a little while. Yeah,
yeah, right? Like, how is that going to work? I mean, I'm going to assume it'll just keep pushing it back. But, I mean, are you guys given, like, a separate just, like, dossier on just COVID-19 precautions and things like that?
We just produced, my wife produced with HCT Media, produced a film called Ghosts of the Ozarks last month. So we did the whole, you know, mainly HCT Media, but they did a lot of the preparation. Oh, and Devil Tub Productions. And they did COVID safety stuff. We had a quarantine. We all stayed on the same place in a hotel on the same floor. Mm-hmm. We ate 3 meals a day that were all brought to us. You know, I actually stayed off property, but I was quarantined myself. And yeah, and then you know, people wore masks all the time when you're taking off for a scene. But even they'd done something where they had some of the characters wear masks.
Wow. Oh wow.
So they could wear masks even on camera. So it was really interesting. We got tested all the time. So it's a new world.
I only saw the nose test. You did like this. I don't know what that.
Oh,
test
we did
is.
We did a blood test to see if we had antibodies. So they take our temperature and see if we had the antibodies or if we've been infected.
Are you worried about like the long term repercussions this might have? Like I've read writers even think about like what kind of scenes they can write going forward in a way that limits, you know, the amount of people on set. Like, are we going to see big crowds? Are we going to see less love scenes, stuff like that?
I think everything will get back to normal soon. You know, not normal.
Close enough.
But, you know, it'll all be different. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Things have changed, but hopefully, ultimately, like, for the better, everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, you know, for the better, I mean, I think for a lot of people, the Scream franchise is something, a lot, hearing that it's coming back, is a big deal for people. And you know, so can you talk about, you know, what was the process of hearing about, you know, doing another film? What was the decision process in you saying, I'm ready to, you know, come back to this franchise?
And without Wes, though.
Yeah, without Wes is a
first
big thing.
Without Wes.
Okay, talk about, you know, some of those feelings coming back to the series with all of this, you know, coming on.
Yeah, I mean, I love playing the character. I love the first Scream. It was just sort of like my favorite, just that time period and just something that I love the script, and it just all kind of came together with Wes behind it and Kevin Williamson. So it was really great. You know, it was like, oh, Wes is not directing it, but the directors are really talented. They did a film called Ready or Not. That's really wonderful.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, and they're really talented up-and-coming film. Well, not, they've already come up. Really great filmmakers and just are low. The more, like, I go down this whole thing is, and the more within my career, it's like you have to do stuff you love, you know what I mean? That you really are passionate about and you're going to spend your time doing it. And I think when you love something, it really shows. And so I do love horror movies and I love playing this character and I love Wes and sort of carrying on his legacy and just continuing what he did. And then getting to work with Courtney and Nev, hopefully, and you know, this whole group of like people, I don't know. It's a blessing, you know, I feel honored to be able to do it. So I don't worry too much about any of the other kind of stuff about the career sort of directions or anything. I like doing things I love.
That's awesome. I mean,
was story a big factor in you signing into this one too?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So like the Scream 3 had the script had to get thrown out at some point because of some sort of situation. Like there couldn't be any high school. There was some kind of high school tragic situation that happened.
Oh, wow.
And they changed it so that there weren't really any sort of kids in that one, or high school kids.
Kind of changed the makeup of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we never had a real script, you know, to start with. We were always getting pages, and there was always kind of this tone came out that was a little different. Mm-hmm. And Wes had a great sense of humor. So in like looking at it as Wes's kind of world, you know, there was also this really interesting, I'm not sure which what's the Freddy one? Jeez.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Jeez. Yeah. One of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, he did this real cool, like, you know, broke the third wall, fourth wall.
Fourth wall, yeah.
Yeah, broke the
fourth
wall.
You're talking about a New Nightmare. Yeah,
yeah, the New Nightmare, stuff like that. So I think it was his sort of New Nightmare-ish version of a Scream one.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's like the two things. So there's like real interesting, fun humor and stuff in that. But they never had a full script.
Gotcha.
But to answer your question, yeah, story was important. And Kevin Williamson being involved was important. And I hope they get Nev, because that's super important.
Do you talk about going back because of things you love. So I have to wonder, the Scream franchise, do you have a favorite? What would be your, what is David Arquette's personal Scream film ranking?
Oh, I'd say 1, 2, 4, and 3.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think one is my, is in like my personal top 10. Maybe that's just a 90s baby thing, but
yeah.
I was
far way too young.
That's the eternal dilemma. Well, this is the funny thing, because you mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street. We had a conversation with Elijah Wood before, you know, the coronavirus even came out, and it was a whole conversation about horror. Me and him were going back and forth about Nightmare on Elm Street 3. This guy hadn't seen it. We'll talk at some point. We'll have to have the conversation about a full review of Nightmare on Elm Street 3. But yeah, that's the eternal dilemma, is kind of trying to put this guy onto some of these classic things. Like you're mentioning Nightmare on Elm Street. Do you have any favorite horror films? It seems like you're a horror buff.
I love horror films. Mm-hmm. Oh man, Hereditary was insane. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad with words and names and titles and face. Like I always get things all messed up. But I love that. Ooh, Midsommar. Ooh.
Yeah.
That was intense, man. Yeah. That was I think they're kind of next leveling some of these movies now.
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorite. But High Tension was a great one. Wow.
Yeah.
I love The Shining. I love the original Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are some of my favorite. Oh, The Thing I loved.
Ooh, classic. Nice one. Yeah, that's a really good one. Really good film. That's good stuff. Again, for people that aren't up on horror, like, because realistically, Dave just dropped like classic, like just a number of really just iconic horror films. Especially if you're talking about The Thing. Don't talk to me about horror if you haven't seen The Thing. Is all I'm saying.
No, definitely not. Although, you know, I think, you know, we mentioned how we would both put Scream 4 in third, but I really like that movie. I thought it did like a really great job of reviving the series for them, because there was a long gap between 3 and 4 when that one came out.
Yeah, they did a great job. That was a tough time for me too. I sometimes look at some of these like how was the experience and how was the film. So like a film like Scream 4, I look back and I was like, oh, there's something heartbreaking about it to me.
I know you're in the early process, you know, at least early enough that you guys haven't even really been able to start filming yet. But has there been any conversations about, again, like any honoring towards Wes in the next film? Like, or is that even something you guys are considering at this stage currently?
Sort of out of my department, but okay. I'm sure they're doing stuff, and I'm sure there'll be like Easter eggs and stuff.
Yeah,
I think Wes like. I think he was definitely the janitor in Scream 1, I think. And so, I don't know. There's so much technology now. It would be great to sort of do something really cool. I would do that if I was directing it. I would do an Alfred Hitchcock moment with Wes, like, you know, have him pass by. People be like, what?
I wanted, because you mentioned Hereditary and Midsommar. I mean, those are some very, like, you know, prestigious, you know, prestigious films in general, but like specifically for horror. There's like, do you have aspirations to kind of go into that lane, maybe as a producer or director at some point?
Well, this last film we did, Ghost of the Ozarks, that's a horror.
Okay.
I directed one. My first film I directed was called The Tripper, which is only available on DVD, but it's a trip. It's about a killer that's obsessed with Ronald Reagan, who attacks hippies at an outdoor music festival. So I did like a political satire in a horror film. I feel like you
can update that now.
Yes. I'm telling you, we're living The Tripper 2 right now.
Oh, man.
I wanted to do The Tripper 2 called The Burning Bush and have it at a religious sort of Burning Man camp where
there you go.
That's tight. I would watch.
Zombies because they drug them.
You might need, I mean, hey, look,
slasher.
We got a couple of months before this next election. You might need to figure something out, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, just do a teaser for it.
Drop it on YouTube, you'll be good to go. I'm noticing in your background it looks like there's a puppet, and I know in the doc there's a moment where you have a puppet. It's like there was a Kanye West puppet that was dancing. Can you talk about like I'm assuming you have like a love of puppetry, but two, like, what's the Kanye West puppet? What's the story with that one?
Well, I love Kanye. I've always loved what he does and his, I love his music. And, you know, that was, cause I'm one of the owners of Bootsy Bellows, and we have puppets there that sort of go and dance around. It's funny. It kind of becomes just more of a, like, Instagrammy moment where people can take a picture and just have fun. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of when we were putting the place together, I used to give out candy and stuff. And I just want, you know, you try to provide an environment where people just forget everything. Like sometimes people worry about dancing, but you know, if it's a puppet, they'll be dancing with the puppet and kissing the puppet. Like, you mean, it's a surprise. Like, people let their inhibitions go. So that's the idea, to just create a sort of atmosphere that's lighter, funner, and just be silly.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. One thing I'm just thinking about now, I didn't realize I even mentioned earlier, not saying that you're on that same trajectory, but I mean, Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler. In just thinking about the doc, was that something you watched again? Do you remember when you watched it the first time? Was that an inspiration for, you know, you in this particular moment in your life?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I definitely watched that. And I watched Beyond the Mat again. I watched a bunch of stuff. Yeah, that's an incredible film. I loved, you know.
Classic.
Mickey Rourke's performance, and Darren Aronofsky is one of the great directors, so. Yeah, that was that movie's real good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like,
with a lot of hardcore stuff. Yeah, it's a hardcore sport, man. You end up, like, for one, like in Mexico, I fractured a few ribs, so then I was having to take all these hits, and like, you know, day after day, like taking these hits, you can't breathe. You're like, your whole body's in pain, and I just was amazed that these people could do this all the time.
Yeah.
So then you have to take a painkiller too. You know, you get a few painkillers, and then you don't want to get hooked on them. So you stop them, and then you start drinking too much. And it's just like all recipes for, you know, just trouble. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, there's crazy stuff that happens in the wrestling business. You show up and your hotel room's not there, or, you know, someone won't pay you, like really weird stuff all the time. And you have to kind of figure all this stuff out. It's all this learning curve of like, oh, okay. So then you have to learn to call ahead, make sure this is, did you book it on a price line or whatever? Like, how did you place my reservation? Like, I don't know. It's all crazy things you only learn if you hit the road and start doing it.
Yeah. I think you're in the position you're in, not just with wrestling, but with other things that, you know, we mentioned COVID earlier, you're probably someone that has a little more knowledge compared to some other people who are like aspiring to be, you know, TV show makers, filmmakers, or what have you. Do you have any, you know, can you think of any advice or any, you know, pieces of wisdom you'd have for someone who was trying to aspire to be, you know, in you know, an actor or a filmmaker, a producer in you know, today's Hollywood, you know, whether it's, you know, VOD or just with the COVID-19, any advice you'd have for people in these times?
Absolutely. I mean, you have a lot of tools now that you can use. Like your phone is enough to shoot a cool short or something. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. So you could study all the greats. You know what I mean? Just go to AFI and watch the top 100 films. You know what I mean? If you want to get into filmmaking, mm-hmm. you discovered certain things and certain actors, and you can then see where they trained and like read a book on that acting style. But I've, one of the main things I've learned, and it's something I learned recently, and it's why I did this documentary, is no one's going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. You just have to get out there and do it. There's great books now, like Save the Cat. I mean, people make jokes about it, but because it's so helpful to writing scripts, and there's just all these different things you learn, but it's all stuff you learn as you start doing it, as you start reading these books, as you start studying these films, as you start, you know, planning what you want to do. Because another thing I learned is I've wasted a lot of time going in misdirections, like getting caught up in the fun side of things. And like, you know, I always took acting very seriously. You know, I had a job the next day. I'd be prepared. And, you know, I mean, I'm not really great with lines all the time. You know, I study them like crazy, but because I'm dyslexic, until I get on the set and am able to work with another actor, the words are kind of jumbled to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's all kind of stuff like that. Like, spend your energy going towards your goals and like really doing stuff and building social media now. And all those kind of things have a factor in the future where you want to start promoting things and to throw stuff out.
What type of films excite you now? Like when you're looking at new roles and projects, what do you gravitate towards?
Well, we started this with this movie XTR. We started a documentary company. There's just such incredible documentaries out right now. We have one out called The Fight and Mucho Mucho Amor. Those are two really great documentaries that we were a little part of, but honored to have been a part of them. That's a really interesting space right now, especially with what's going on. And documentaries are something filmmakers can do. A lot of people can do short film documentaries, mm-hmm. and just start that. You do find a subject matter, learn how to tell the story within a little 15-minute time frame or something. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get the feeling of it. And then you just do that a few times and then you expand. So documentaries really excite me now. I don't know. There's a few things I'm working on that are a little top secret. Okay. But it's like, there's a line in the movie where my wife was like, you know, last year was a heart attack. This year it's a death match. What's next year? Now that I've got next year planned up, she's like got her head in her hands again. But she never believes in me until it starts going, and then she jumps on board, and then she takes over the ship, and then she gets it done. So,
hey, that be it sounds like you got a good working relationship with your wife. I mean,
really my hero.
You can't ask for any more than that. I think that's going to do it for us, David Arquette. Thank you very much.
Hey,
thank you so much.
Thanks, Vision.
You cannot kill David Arquette. Does that have an official release date?
Late August. I mean, it's coming up.
Okay.
We're also at the Fantasia Film Festival, so
okay,
there's going to be an announcement for that. And if you want to see it early, you can see it there.
That, I mean, again, I mentioned Elijah Wood. He's the one who mentioned, who's the first talk to us about Fantasia Festival.
Oh, so, cool.
You know, yeah, synergy. It's all there. But yeah, David, thank you. Greatly appreciate you coming through.
Thank you so much, man.
Guys.
Appreciate it.
And I just want to shout out to the listeners, even though, you know, most of them won't be able to see. David has a marvelous shirt on. Right.
Yes, yes.
Crazy fit.
This is Ball Getty's line, Monk Punk.
Or?
Yeah, he's amazing.
I was gonna say something when he first popped on, but I didn't know. I don't know what David Arquette's fashion sense is like. I don't know if I'm gonna be like, yo, that's a dope shirt. You're just like, yeah, somebody just handed it to me 5 minutes ago. You never know. You never know.
But this is Bald's clothing line, Monk Punk, but he made me buy it. I handed it to me. And it's expensive and stuff, but he does really quality, amazing stuff. He also did a song at the end of the movie. He does really
good music
too.
You cannot kill David Arquette. What's the release date is August 28th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the release date's August 28th.
We got it. We got it. It's dope. You know, I guess a fun end of summer wrestling doc for the people that honestly, the people who really need to get the true story on you and, you know, how you have redeemed yourself. I would say you redeemed yourself.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm definitely doing the movie for real wrestling fans, so I appreciate that.
No problem. No problem at all. Definitely. That is our bag. At least that is my bag. I don't know if Frazier's become a wrestling fan at this point, but
we'll a little see. Bit. How can you not after watching that?
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
All right. I think David said it all. I think, you know, our conversation it was dope that he was just that open. You know what I mean? You know, not just with, you know, indulging my pro wrestling love, but, you know, talking about his appreciation of horror films and the work he's doing on trying to get into more of the production side of things. You know, it's really dope to see he's still able to move within the industry.
Real down to earth guy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for that. And again, if you're a pro wrestling fan, I hope you appreciated it. If you're not, I'd say, you know, again, 20 years, you might want to check out a zany movie called Ready to Rumble. It's fine. I actually ended up talking to the directors of the documentary, and they were kind of like, yeah, it's cool. But they were so nice, though. They were hype off. There was like one particular scene David Arquette has. I'm like, yeah, man, he really brought it in that scene. I'm like, all right, look at y'all appreciating this man's work when nobody else really wants to. Is that it for us this week, Frazier? We said enough?
I think we got to get out of here. I mean, we gave the people so much.
Facts.
What Arquette, so much to think on. I just hope we see more of that guy going forward. He's in a new movie that came out recently called Spree, which is making the rounds. But, you know, regardless, Arquette is like one of those staples of the, I think, like the late 90s, early aughts.
Right.
Like, not even just Scream. You think back to, like, shit, like Eight-Legged Freaks.
Right, 100%.
And all that, you know? So, he's definitely a guy, I think, who could have, like, a really great, like, second wind as an older statesman in a lot of good movies.
Yeah, if they can figure out how to do that for John Travolta, we could do this for David Arquette, right? But, yeah, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. If you want to continue the conversation, at Complex Pop on Twitter and Instagram, don't give us any nonsense, but we are down to have a conversation. Watch Less drops every Wednesday, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you guys get your podcasts. Please be sure to like, comment, review, rate, share, whatever you got to do to boost the signal and let the people know that you want to hear this type of content from Complex so we can give that guys to you and more stuff in that vein. For Frazier, I'm Cal advising you as always. I know these theaters are opening up, but you guys got to chill. We can't. The last thing I want to see is AMC opening and then closing in the same weekend because people were coughing and not wearing masks or socially. Be safe, man. The popcorn ain't that crazy. Tune in and watch less. Yeah. Watch Less is hosted by Frazier Tharp and myself, Cal. Our producer is Taliba Newman. Our associate producer and sound engineer is Jasmine Plata. Our editor is Tyler Boltheis. Our production manager is Chancel Correa. Talent booker is Anthony Allred. Our junior booker is Austin Bailey. Our director of talent relations is Kristen Price Harrell. Senior director of operations is Jen Stewart. Watch Less is a part of the Complex Podcast Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.